how do I advance it?
It should do this, but let's see. Okay. Yeah, you should be able to just press this.
Okay. All right, we'll try.
Okay.
Thank you. Again, I'm Martha Gonzalez from the Coastal Region, and I am based out of Miami. I thank you for staying this afternoon. I am the last speaker just between you and sunny San Diego, so I thank you for staying for the afternoon. I'm going to talk about a project that we are doing in South Florida, and it's with farm workers, so it's more at the local level, just like Evelyn's. So I think you heard from some of my colleagues the program planning, talk about program planning implementation. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of a visual of where we are with this particular project in South Florida. And we're in this evaluation cycle, and in this program planning cycle, actually, in the assessing needs. So what I want to do today is sort of describe to you what it's like to be a farm worker woman in Homestead, Florida, what's the environment like in 2008, and also to describe the role in bringing evidence-based interventions to our partners in Homestead, Florida, who are working with those farm worker women, and how do we implement those evidence-based interventions with those partners with that, as you will imagine, have limited access to resources and information. And also to present some of the preliminary results of our needs assessment there. So I'll be able to share some of the information we've collected through our partner about knowledge, attitudes, and beliefs about cancer and cancer information from the farm worker women. So I wanted to show where Homestead is, which is where the two camps are located, and Homestead, for those of you, just to give you a point of reference, is located about an hour south of Miami. I wanted to acknowledge my partners, and our partner down there is Sembrando Flores, and this is a faith-based nonprofit organization that works with farm workers. They began working on HIV because there were huge needs in that area in Homestead, and as you might imagine, there are so many other needs down there, so they focus in a little bit of everything. They do mostly HIV education and interventions, but they also do infant mortality, vaccine campaigns, education for young mothers. I mean, they do everything and anything for that community. And also the Susan G. Komen for the Cure, the Miami for Lauderdale affiliate, who came into this project after the CIS met with Sembrando Flores and acknowledged that we really needed a partner to help us deal with so much need of the women in regards to breast cancer. So after the CIS got them in contact, put the two organizations together to work together, it was just a beautiful partnership because at the time, Komen was looking to increase their efforts in the Homestead area, and this seems like the wonderful opportunity that they were looking for. So what are we doing down there? Well, Sembrando Flores is a wonderful organization, trusted organization in that community. Unfortunately, it's small organization, so there's the executive director, Nancy Rivera, and then they have a nurse, a volunteer, and one paid staff. They work primarily in two camps, and I'll tell you a little bit of what that means. So they work in two camps, which is a huge, vast area. They are a very grassroots organization. They had identified cancer as a major problem because of the many women and men who were coming to the organization looking for help, looking for resources, and unfortunately, on very late stages. They had a wealth of anecdotal data. They had information. Like I said, they're a source of information and resources about everything and anything. So they did have a lot of information, just nothing that it, was written or was documented that we could start working from. And they were in need of a cancer education program. And like many organizations in our community, they were ready. They wanted everything. They wanted trainings. They wanted us to go out with them door to door and provide training and education to the women. So what we said was we had expertise. We could provide training for the leaders of their community. They had had some experience with focus groups. So they really did not like that. And unfortunately, in some cases, money incentives doesn't work everywhere. And this is a great example of that. Some interventions had been done with other organizations there, and they had provided money incentives, and it had not gone well at all. So they had a really bad experience with that. So the first thing the organization told us was, you know, if we are open to doing research, we're open to doing any intervention that you would like us to do, just don't do focus groups and don't bring money to have people participate into your intervention. So we looked at, we looked back at the literature, and we looked for an intervention that could work into this community, how to assess really the needs of this community. And we found an intervention by Dr. Paula Lance out of Michigan with migrant workers there. And it was peer discussions. It was not called focus groups. It was called peer discussions. So it sounded like the perfect intervention for us. The CIS got in touch with Dr. Lance. Unfortunately, she had not kept the tools that she had used at the time. It was an intervention that she had done a while back. So she didn't have the tools, but she was able to give us some feedback on her process on how to conduct the peer discussions. So. Sembrando Flores was on board with that. We created flyers, and like I said, they are very trusted in this community, so the women were able to participate. Another advantage that we had with Sembrando Flores is that because they had been working on HIV prevention and education, they knew about evidence-based program health planning. So we decided to conduct the peer discussions for the farm worker women. We initially thought about concentrating on breast and cervical cancer, but as we moved along the planning process, we realized that we really needed to start from the ground up. So we decided to concentrate on cancer and breast cancer, so general knowledge of cancer and breast cancer. So with the support of the Susan G. Komen for the Cure, we were able to provide childcare because from the feedback that we got from Sembrando Flores, we knew that most of the women either worked on the fields or were homemakers, and they needed childcare if we wanted them to participate in the peer discussion. So we wanted to provide an environment where they felt comfortable, where they could share information about their health, about what was going on in their camps. So we were not only going to ask questions of them, but we were going to provide also breast cancer education. And these are just two of the pictures. The one at the bottom is where Sembrando Flores is, and the one at the top is the building where we conduct the peer discussions. So what is it like to live at the camps in Homestead, Florida? Well, the camps are administrated by the Homestead Housing Authority, and we're conducting our intervention at the Redland Farm Worker Center. That's the official name, but everybody knows this place as the camps. And the South Dade Farm Worker Center. The qualifications for living there are that one person must be employed in agriculture. They have to be legal residents, and that means, and for the farm worker population in South Florida, that means you can be a U.S. citizen, you can have a green card, you can have a visa, you can have many other kinds of documentation, but as long as you have an ID, then you can solicit this kind of assistance. But you must meet the extremely low income level, which is about $18,000. Just, you know, to give you an idea, most families earn about $300 a week. That's just an average. This is what the houses look like. The one in the upper left-hand corner, that is the Homestead Housing Authority. So they are the administrators of the camp. And then the other pictures are just pictures of the houses. As you can see, they're not fancy, and they are in badly need of support and many other things, but we won't go into that. And then the one at the bottom, if you see the sign, it's a sheet, it's a blanket. And this is the way, and we found from some around the floors, this is the effective way to do social marketing and communicate with the people who live in the camps. Or either that, or they knock on doors. So this is the way that we promote health messages in these camps. So a little bit more about who lives in the camps. Most of them are Hispanic. They are white. There's about 300 families on each camp. And then we know the head of household is mostly male, but according to Sembrando Flores, actually, most of the head of households are women. So there's a little bit of discrepancy of what's going on here. Also, according to the homestead housing data, they only have three to four members per house of people living in the houses. We know from Sembrando Flores that there's actually two or three families living in each house. So I'm going to share with you some of the preliminary findings. So we had 50 participants. We conducted 7 peer discussions. We had 50 participants. Most of the participants are from Mexico or El Salvador. There were about 63% from Mexico. There were some few that were from Honduras, from Puerto Rico, Colombia. We asked them, how many years have you been living in the U.S.? And that ranged from being 3 years to 20 years. Most of them, again, they were Hispanic, and we had an average of 9 people at each peer discussion. So when we asked about what are the causes of cancer, what do you know about cancer, all the groups mentioned food, diet, as the main causes of cancer. They all mentioned, some of them mentioned smoking, some of them mentioned sun exposure, some of them mentioned even using deodorants or using the microwave. So we know that there's a lot of misconceptions there. When we asked them about, you know, why don't you go and get checked up? Why don't we go and get those screenings? They all mention fear of finding something bad, and then some other bad things will happen to you, and these are, I'm quoting here, the embarrassment of being seen by a male physician versus a female physician, the lack of information of where to go, what's going to happen when I go for screening, the cost is also a very important barrier, where to go, if you go to a general physician, a primary care physician, you're going to be charged, and then you're going to be charged for the screening. And also the time is very important for them as well. How much do they know about early detection and screening? Most groups mention mammograms, pap tests. Some people knew about colonoscopies, even though we're not talking about colorectal cancer. They did mention visits to the doctor. However, there's a lot of conflicting messages. A lot of these women go back to their home country because they find that they can afford to get medical treatment in their home countries versus being taken care of here in the United States. So, and they don't know exactly why they go to get screened. So they go because the doctor tells them to, but not exactly. They don't know the purpose of the test. They don't know the why and the how. There are also, again, conflicting messages from their country of origin. They might hear from us that they had, you know, cancer screening could start at 40, 50, and then in their home countries, they might be saying that they have to start breast cancer screening at 35. So they're very confused about that. In regards to the sources of information, most of them talked about their local clinics, the doctor, even Sembrando Flores. None of the women knew about 1-800 numbers for cancer information or for health information. They don't trust 1-800 numbers for information, and they are unaware of information services in Spanish via phone lines. So they did not know about the cancer information service or common for the cure, their 1-800 number. They don't trust the church for health information. Most of the women cited that the church might be the place where they'll be judged. But they did cite the schools as a source of information. Some of the next steps and opportunities, we want to seek suggestions from the women who participated in the peer discussions, a little bit more of what sort of bringing the solution from them instead of us giving them the solution. And then we want to definitely provide, so we're going to go back to a drawing board and look for evidence-based interventions that can fill the gaps of education that we have identified. And we want to continue to foster partnerships that could help us address the economic barriers. Again, Komen has been great at providing support for the peer discussions, and they've actually committed to taking those women who were eligible for breast cancer screening and have not been screened yet to work with one of their grantees, so they'll be taken care of. And then, you know, there are great opportunities for community-based participatory research here. So I invite you, if you're in Florida, to get in contact with us. And again, there's just so much work to do down there. And this is my disclosure information, which I have nothing to disclose. And that's it. Thank you. Any questions? Yeah. No. No, yeah. Actually, the migrant workers, you know, everybody, people tend to use the term migrant loosely. We don't call them migrant workers in Florida or in this area particularly because they don't travel. They stay. And they have been, again, you know, they came from their home country and they stayed in that area and they don't travel, you know, following the crop season, no. Well, it takes a little bit of time to get them comfortable. So one of the things the way we start the peer discussions, and I actually conduct the peer discussions because Sembrando Flores felt that they didn't want anyone from the camp. So one of the interventions I had suggested was using the promotora model or the peer educator model, and they actually had a bad experience with that as well in the past. So they wanted someone from the outside coming into the camp. So I conducted the peer discussions, and the way we try to make people feel comfortable is asking them, you know, a little bit of their home country, to share maybe a recipe or talk about what are their favorite foods or how long have you been here. So we try to make them comfortable first, and then we get into, so these are the different questions that I'm going to ask. And then I answer their questions.
Hispanic background, or do they speak Spanish, or if they don't, is there an effort
So there are limited resources in that area. There is a clinic in one of the camps. It is a little bit expensive for them. It's about $40 to visit the primary care physician, and they feel like they can't ask for a woman physician, So, you know, we have to do also a lot of education about, you know, these are your rights as a patient. They don't feel comfortable doing that. So there are limited resources. There's two physicians that attend that clinic. I know for a fact that one is a woman. There is also one of the larger hospitals in South Florida just opened a brand new facility. It's beautiful, but actually most of the farm workers only visit the hospital through the emergency room. So, you know, obviously this is not the place to ask for a female physician. And then there is also another organization called Open Door, and it's a health clinic, and it's actually one of Susan G. Komen for the Cure is one of their grantees. But they have a Hispanic physician, but again, that clinic tends to the needs not only of Hispanics in that area, but also Haitians that are in the Keys and they travel to Homestead because it's the closest area. So they wouldn't go to Miami, for example. So the population is very diverse in that area.
Mm-hmm. And depending, of course, how you do it, it's very much like a discussion. So how
were the peer discussions differently structured for the group
so that they didn't feel threatened or negative about that?
Okay. So the first thing we did, again, was to make them comfortable. In the original intervention by Dr. Lance, they conducted about 10 interventions, and they only asked questions. The way we do it is we ask the questions. First, we have a little bit of like integration, and you know, we just what I explained, and then I ask the questions. I don't give any answers. I just wait for them to tell me, give them time to tell me their stories if they want to tell me stories. And sometimes they deviate, so you know, I try to bring them back to the question. And then at the end, I go back to all the questions and I give them the answers. So I don't necessarily hold the session to a very specific format that we have to follow. And I give them the answers to those questions. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Is there another? Did you have another question?
Can't add a portion of the program, but we all know that they do things.
to determine whether or not what you did was impactful and had outcomes. And so in that proposal, they will allow for that.
Great. Yes, absolutely. You mean the sort of whole using what works? Is that what you're, or the whole evidence-based? I mean, I think in terms of evidence-based cancer control, there are many organizations. I mean, I think this is the advancement of the field. I mean, this is where we are going, I think, in terms of health education, health communications, really trying to have take our research and actually get it back into practice. So I think, you know, this is a wave, and I think the CIS is really part of that wave. Other organizations as well are partnering. I don't think there's a specific initiative that...
Actually,
go ahead. Cynthia, you better answer that. Any other questions for any of our panelists? No, I think that's actually a great example of both organizations working together, bringing different things to the table. Again, Body and Soul was a research-tested intervention. It came out of a randomized trial that now is being disseminated, but disseminated in a way that we really do that and we stay, you know, the fidelity of the original research. So that's a great example. Thank you. Any other questions for our panelists? If we could give them a round of applause, since we really didn't do that after each one. Thank you. Ev? Yes, and I would just like to thank you all for being here. I also would like to just sort of in summary point out that we really are doing this at both the national, regional, and local level. Actually, something I would like to share that is somewhat public information, but in the last few weeks we have learned that NCI is not going to continue the CIS partnership program past January 2010. And for those of you who are working with the CIS, and again, we will be here and are working strong, and we'll be doing many of these Using What Works training. It is something you may want to let NCI know. So I thank you for being here today. Thanks. I know.
point, huh?
Thank you.
anybody